Welcome to Women Who Move Nations, a podcast by the Public Transport Association, Australia, New Zealand. Each episode, we interview top female executives from the public transport sector in Australia, New Zealand, and around the world. If you're interested in leadership, workplace gender equality, or building clean, green transport for the future, this is the podcast for you. This season is proudly sponsored by NEC Smart Transport Solutions. Find out more at nec.com.au. Now here's your host, Michelle Batsis.
Hello and welcome to our next episode of Women Who Move Nations. I'm Michelle Batsis, your host, the Executive Director of Future Mobility at the Department of Transport in Victoria. And I'm very, very, very excited today to be interviewing Ishra Baksh, who is the Executive Director of Strategic Insights and Transformation at the Department of Transport and Main Roads in Queensland. Welcome, Ishra.
Thanks, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me today.
I'm really excited about this conversation, Ishra, because, you know, we've known each other for a number of years, you know, within the kind of transport sector in Australia and, you know, working on the kind of latest trends and how they apply to the work that we're doing, you know, on the ground to help communities get to where they need to go. So looking forward to the conversation. And I thought I would start actually just by asking you, could you share with our listeners your career story? You know, how have you ended up where you are and, you know, why are you in transport?
Absolutely. So my career story is interesting. I actually started in our department as a graduate. So I've been here for a long time. I left for a little bit and came back. So I worked in the private sector and came back. But I've spent most of my career in the transport and mobility space, focused on customer and technology, but also continuous improvement and business improvement. So it's been a really varied career. I've been really fortunate because every couple of years I've had the opportunity to do something different, work on a different project, learn a different aspect of about transport, not just from, I guess, a technical perspective, but working with a different set of customers.
Ishra, thanks so much for kind of painting that picture of the different kinds of things that you've done in transport. Really interesting as well that you have spent most of the career in public, but you did move back to private and you came back. I wanted to ask you, so perhaps if you can talk to us about the time that you've been at TMR in Queensland, what are some of the career milestones or achievements that you're most proud of?
Absolutely. I think the ones that I am most proud of are the ones where we were working on the employee experience as well as the customer experience. So there are times where I've had the opportunity to work with our frontline staff around some of our different products and services or our processes to really improve them from a customer perspective, but also an employee perspective. And why that was a career milestone for me was the diversity of thought that came through in those conversations and how much value I got from those conversations as much as it was about achieving the milestones of that particular improvement project. A couple of other things that I'm actually really proud of and some career milestones are the opportunities that I got in the future mobility space. So working with emerging technology providers, testing and trialing different products and services for different cohorts of customers, whether that was students or some of our more vulnerable communities. And more recently, I've had the really great opportunity to be part of really large customer technology projects, whether that be things like our digital license or our transition to more contemporary ticketing products and services for our customers. It's been a really wide and varied experience. Part of those career milestones were the people that I worked with. So throughout those projects and programs, I met some really great leaders. And I felt like I learned some really great ways of working from those people.
That's awesome. There's so many questions I now want to ask you that kind of come out of that, you know, about diversity of thought and about kind of leadership mentors. But there's something I want to kind of ask you first, just to set the scene for our listeners who might not be familiar with Queensland and its transport networks. So you're based in Brisbane, the capital. It's a really large state. You've got southeast Queensland where you've got significant population, but you've also got significant regional areas. And I know there's a lot going on in Queensland's transport network and improvements. And so could you just share with our listeners, like, what are the priorities for the department at the moment?
Absolutely. So I think I'll speak a little bit from an infrastructure and services perspective. We have the Olympics coming to Queensland, which is a really exciting time for Queenslanders, but also people who are going to visit our regions and our cities. So we have a pipeline of infrastructure projects that are going to help to deliver the different venues that are going to be needed. But it's all the really exciting work that's happening around how our customers are going to travel during that time. So that's a really big priority for the department. But it's also about the legacy that we're going to leave in Queensland after that. And not just for Southeast Queensland, but also for our regional areas. So as you mentioned, Queensland's a really big state. And I've always said that, you know, as much as we want to drive people to shared forms of transport, primarily public transport, there are some communities that are really going to rely on their private vehicle into the future or a shared form of a smaller vehicle. So some of our priorities are really looking at what those services might look like in our regional communities and really ensuring that those services are accessible and also there's an equitable form of service there. A couple of our other really big priorities are around technology. So there is so much really great technology out there. We learn a lot from our other jurisdictions, which I think is excellent. In the public transport space, what I've always found is how open everyone is to sharing their learnings and helping each other, which is really good. So our priorities for the future are really around what emerging technology fits into our business and supports our customers to use and make choices about how they travel. So whether it be ticketing, whether it be integrated journey planning, payment and booking options, whether it's forms of demand responsive transport technology, technology around identity for registration and licensing as well. There's so many different things in that space, you know, intelligent transport systems, traffic management and travel demand management. There are so many different opportunities we have from a technology space that will overlay on our network that will really give customers the information that they need to make the choices about how they travel. Probably something I did also want to mention is that Queensland has a habit of experiencing quite severe weather events. And these are really disruptive for our customers, for industry, and also can damage our network. So a definite focus, I think, for the future is the resilience of our network and how we put in place the measures that we need to not only keep our community safe, but keep transport moving from an economic perspective.
Yeah, that's, I mean, so great to hear. And there's a lot there, isn't it? And, you know, obviously Queensland has had significant flooding events occurring and, you know, more common as well. So that has a big impact on communities and the way that you service them through transport needs. I keep hearing you use the word diversity and I heard equity and I kind of mentioned before I wanted to talk to you about it. And I want to have a conversation about diversity and inclusion, both from the perspective of the diversity of communities that we serve, but also diversity in leadership. So let's talk about our public transport networks and our transport networks more broadly first. What do you see as the challenges and the opportunities for creating inclusive and equitable transport networks?
I love talking about this topic. So I come from quite a diverse background. English is not my first language, and I actually didn't speak English until I started school. And I remember my mum always saying to me, "You don't have many friends." And I thought, well, that's because I don't speak English yet, mum. So I do have a bit of a firsthand view into one segment of our community that really relies on the transport system to do all the things they need to. So go to school or go to work, access healthcare, that type of thing. The challenges that I see are, I guess, the depth and breadth of our customers. So we have many, many different types of customers. Queensland is experiencing significant population growth, and we're really fortunate to be developing a really diverse and vibrant community in Southeast Queensland, but also in our region. I guess one of the challenges is really meeting the expectations of our customers, whilst also balancing the challenges that we have with, you know, funding and a whole bunch of different things. So I think that's sort of a big challenge, and it's not unlike other jurisdictions. But I also think there's some really great opportunities. And one of those things is really found in technology. So there are lots of different pieces of technology that can help make our network more accessible. but also more legible for our customers who may speak a different language. And that is quite close to my heart. I'm from a community and I live and work in a community that's really diverse and quite car dependent, to be honest. You know, I came from an environment where getting your first car was a really big milestone for you, and driving your car can often be seen as like you might, you know, as more affluent, I guess. So I think one of the challenges is really about communicating to our customers the benefits of shared transport and catching public transport. But on the flip side, the opportunity that you have is all of the things that we're doing in Queensland. So really working on making it easier to pay for public transport, for example, by tapping on and tapping off with your credit or debit card, having things in different languages, you know, considering these customers when we think about wayfinding at our public transport hubs. So there's lots of tools and technology out there to be able to help us. But I guess we're always trying to balance the competing priorities of many different things. And the diversity of our customers means we really need to include their voice in what we're doing and help understand from them what our priorities should be. Because we can't do everything.
No, you can't. But, I mean, you're certainly doing a lot, aren't you? And I've just thank you for sharing. I just love hearing your passion on this topic. And I learned something about you. I really appreciate you sharing, you know, some personal aspects as well, because I actually didn't know that English wasn't your first language and that you didn't learn English until school. So, you know, that's actually really fascinating to me and kind of leads me into, you know, if we talk about diversity and leadership, and there's so many aspects I want to unpack with you, Ishra, on this. Let's just start with you and your personal experience, right? So you're a female, you're in a senior role, you obviously, you know, come from a culturally diverse background where English wasn't your first language. And I know in previous conversations, and I hope you're comfortable with me saying this, that, you know, certainly there can be, you know, this concept of the brown girl, you know, or, you know, just not kind of fitting in the usual mold that you might see around a leadership table. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what's been your experience?
Absolutely. I totally am the brown girl. I love being a brown girl. I'm really proud of it. Yeah, I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of where I come from. And I grew up with really strong women who have taught me a lot. So a lot of, I guess, my leadership style comes from growing up in a really, really big family with lots of different people and lots going on all the time. And if you think about the transport network, it's really big and there's lots going on all the time. So I feel like I sit in that environment quite comfortably. I guess when it comes from a leadership perspective, you know, over the years, I definitely, as you said, don't come in the mold as many other leaders might have. I didn't tend to see people like me in leadership positions growing up, but now I definitely do. So I know lots of people of different backgrounds in leadership positions. I've learned a lot from all of those people in just the way that they carry themselves, the way that they make a space for themselves at that table. And the way that they made a space for themselves at that table was not to hide who they are. So I think growing up, you know, you feel like you need to fit in a lot more. You know, we moved to Australia when I was about 5 years old. So I have lived in Australia for a long time and I love living here. And part of the reason I love living here is because of the culture that we've created. You know, it's a culture around helping each other, around kindness. And that's what I've actually seen around that leadership table. People being themselves has encouraged me to be myself. And I hope that I can do that for other people who are coming up in the transport and mobility sector, that perhaps if they see people like me and you know, other leaders that I know, that they can find a space for themselves at that table as well and feel like they deserve a space at that table.
Yeah, I mean, amen to that. You're so inspirational when you're talking about this. So
thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just so amazing that you have this confidence, Ishra, because so many people struggle with it.
It's, you know, taken a long time. I think it's taken a long time to get there though.
When you've had your confidence knocked, because we all have been in that situation, right?
Absolutely.
How have you overcome that, or like what strategies have you put in place?
I tend to do a lot of reflection. So I'm not always the loudest person in the room. And sometimes it can take me a little while to gather my thoughts and think about what I need to say, to be honest. So, you know, in all honesty, in my early career, I would not often speak up in a meeting because I was sort of gathering my thoughts and that type of thing. So I'm a reflective person. I do like to reflect and think of what could I have done better. When my confidence has been knocked, I seek feedback from people around me. And I tend to do that in a way, you know, we're talking about diversity. I've got a lot of different, quite fortunate to have a lot of different, I guess, mentors or sponsors that I'm able to reach out to that I can talk to about a certain situation, a certain meeting, you know, a certain project. And they allow me to gather different perspectives, which then I can have a bit of a think about and think, well, what could I potentially have done better? Often, how can I speak up and what is the best way for me to speak up in this situation? You know, I always like to be really respectful, and that's, you know, really important to me, but it's also important for me to be able to speak up. And when my confidence has been knocked, I can tend to go quite internal and think about that a little bit too much on my own. So I really value the people around me that can give me a different perspective on something that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's such great reflection.
Sometimes, Michelle, it's hard to hear, right? Sometimes the things that they tell you are the hard truth, which I think is a really good thing. You know, people have told me, you know, you can have everything you want, just not at the same time. So, you know, when we talk about career and we want to progress our career, we want to balance that with our personal life and our hobbies and that type of thing. You know, people have said, you know, you can have everything that you want, it's just not at the same time. And people have also told me that, you know, I can tend to internalize things quite a bit. But then if you really think about it, those people didn't start the day. Like if your confidence has been knocked, those people didn't start the day thinking, I'm going to knock Isha's confidence today. I'm going to make sure Isha has a bad day today. Nobody's thinking that. So it's just about sometimes I need to get out of my head and help gather some perspectives from diverse people so that I can come up with a bit of a solution of how to feel better or how to deal with that better.
Wow, this is really powerful. I so appreciate you being so honest. So, okay, there's a couple of things that I want to ask you. So sure. First of all, you're talking about these people that you reach out to that can help you give a different perspective. Like, how have you built those relationships?
So really fortunate through associations, like the Public Transport Association that we're speaking through today. Associations have really helped me to connect with people from industry, but also other jurisdictions. The natural sharing of information through transport authorities and government departments has also really helped me to develop those relationships. But I've also found that as I stepped into leadership roles, I had, I guess, my bosses, my managers, often would, you know, you're exposed to different groups of people because you're in different circles and you're going to different things. And so through those people, they connected me with different people who have become also sponsors and sort of that mentor role. People over time have also become friends, which is, you know, I'm really fortunate about. But I guess for those people who sponsored me and introduced me to these people, it was up to me then to foster that relationship and keep building on that relationship. So I think that's the piece of advice that I would give to people who are, I don't think it really matters what point of your career you're in, because you're always going to reach out to different people and talk to them. And in the busy lives that we lead today, I think it's really important that you spend some time fostering those relationships, building those relationships, and forming new ones.
PTA ANZ is proud to bring you Season 7 of the Women Who Move Nations Public Transport Podcast in partnership with NEC Australia. With over a century of innovation and a strong commitment to creating a brighter, more inclusive world, NEC is dedicated to gender equality and diverse perspectives and is amplifying the voices of women leaders in public transport.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such great advice. And particularly the maintaining. I mean, I certainly find it can be easier to build a relationship, but can be difficult to maintain over a period of time. So that's awesome advice. You know, as you've been talking about, you know, the kind of confidence. So something that I've heard a lot from kind of younger women, you know, who I am involved with kind of mentoring or coaching or, you know, just know through my circles, you know, they've said to me that they go to meetings and they're the only female, but they're also the youngest. And they're like, you know, I've been invited to the meeting, but then I don't have an opportunity to speak, you know? And I always kind of say to them, well, I guess there's a reason you've been invited to the meeting. So, you know, just find the time or, you know, find the opportunity. But I don't know, just do you have any thoughts around that? Because I know that you, you know, were in a very senior role and perhaps people might have views that, you know, you're young for that role compared to the other people that sit around that table at that hierarchy level. I don't know. Do you have any advice around that?
Absolutely. I think as leaders, we need to role model the right behaviors. So when I am, I guess, chairing a meeting like that or bringing people together, I've tried to implement some behaviors in those meetings where people do get an opportunity to speak, where I'm sort of calling people out and almost facilitating that conversation a little bit more. So it actually gives people space to be able to speak up. You know, as you said, Michelle, we've both been in meetings before where we haven't had that opportunity to speak up. And part of it is because people are so passionate about what they're talking about that they really want to get their point across. And then before you know it, the time for the meeting's over and you haven't had a chance to say anything. So my advice, I guess, to leaders is that you need to role model those behaviors. A lot of it is about your own emotional intelligence and having an awareness of what's going on in that room. So you can draw on the person and ask them their opinion or ask them if they have anything that they wish to add. From the perspective of that person who feels like they're not being heard in those meetings, I know that this is hard to do and I didn't do this for a really long time, but it's actually having that conversation with those people. You know, if it's happening all the time, I've always gone back and say, look, I really valued the conversation that we had and I valued your opinions and it was really interesting what you were talking about. I'd really like to be able to share my thoughts too.
Yeah, I mean, that's such great advice. Thanks, Ishra. I think there's a lot for our listeners to think about with that. So I want to just talk a little bit more about your leadership style, and you've shared quite a bit, but if you could kind of describe it, like what are the practices you use? And I mean, what I know about you, you know, and having met you actually at a conference, you know, for an association quite a few years back, like what I know about you is you're fantastic at bringing people together. And that's a skill set that doesn't come naturally to a lot of people. They need to kind of develop it. So like, how have you developed it? What are your strategies? And are there any other kind of leadership tips and practices that you have to share?
Absolutely. So I always characterize my leadership style as I connect people and I connect ideas. So I think in my career, I always thought that I had to be the technical expert in everything. And as you grow in your career, I found that's where my comfort zone was. I felt like if I knew about everything, then I could speak up in a meeting and everything, what I had to say was more valuable. But over the last 5 or 6 years, I've really changed my leadership style, and it's about connecting people and connecting ideas. It's about having that awareness and emotional intelligence to pick up on different things that people are saying and connect those with people in your network or connect it with something that someone might be doing in another part of your business. Part of doing that is knowing enough about what's happening across your business. So it's, like I said before, it's maintaining relationships and hearing about what's going on where you work or in your industry and really taking out some time to be able to do that. And not everybody has time to do that, and I totally understand it. My roles have been very much had a stakeholder engagement function, and I've been able to spend some time doing that stakeholder engagement, whereas I know in other roles, they're very busy program or project roles where you don't necessarily get the time to do that. So I guess from, you know, our advice to leaders and from a leadership perspective, the more you can connect people and the more that you can connect ideas means that you're actually creating an environment where diversity of thought is encouraged. As a leader, you're doing that sponsoring and mentoring role almost organically. The past couple of years, I've really tried to focus on how do I achieve the outcomes that I need to in the business whilst also doing the things that I actually really enjoy and giving back. I think that's really important because people spent a lot of time with me throughout my career to give me advice and help me work through different things. And I hope that I'm doing that for people who come and speak to me because I know how much value it was to myself. So I guess when you talk about advice to leaders, we talked about it a little bit before. I know everyone says be authentic and it's like a little bit of a, oh, can you really be? You can, you know, if you're grounded in your values and you know what positive behaviors you have, I think that you can be a really authentic leader. It doesn't mean that you can't be, you know, forthright and you can't be clear. You know, you can still be kind, but it's really about understanding what your values are and sometimes how they translate into a more corporate environment potentially, or if you're leading large frontline teams, how that transitions into a frontline environment. You have to be a little bit flexible.
Such good advice, Ishra. You know,
I hope so. It's a bit practical, but yeah.
Like hearing you say that you connect people and you connect ideas, like my mind's blown. Like what a great way to describe your style and the value you add. Actually listening to you, it sounds like you're in an interview. Like you blow my mind, right? I just like,
thank you.
Like you're amazing. So in terms of the context in transport,
yeah,
like we know at senior levels that we don't have equal representation in terms of gender, in terms of culturally diverse backgrounds, representation really of the communities that we serve at all kind of socioeconomic levels.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I mean, what are your thoughts on this, right? Like what can we be doing? What's been your experience? You know, I think it's worth having conversations about these things. And I know that there's a lot of conversation that happens in different forums and it is hard to actually put practical action into place, right? You know, everyone's got an action plan.
Yeah.
But then you look at the steps and, you know, they're a little vague or, you know, the targets are for like years away. And it's not just in transport, right? Like this is, you know, across so many industries. But, you know, like what are your thoughts on it around the ways that we can be improving that diversity of representation, particularly at the leadership levels? You know, I think the stats still remain true that in transport across Australia, 20% of leadership roles are held by females and 4% of CEO roles are held by females. You know, like that's dire, right? Like, yes. You know, that doesn't sound like we're getting any better. So, yeah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. It's really interesting that you said, you know, we have all of these action plans and we do. There are so many strategies and action plans. I think we need to focus. I think we need to focus on the one or two things that that can really drive better representation and really put all of our efforts into those things. You know, it's interesting just around women in leadership. Over the past couple of years, we've really learned to work in different ways, a lot more flexibly. It's about how life is integrated into our work life and the flexibility that we have to work from different locations and that type of thing. I think, you know, it's interesting. I find that when we're hiring new graduates or I guess younger people who are coming into our business for the first time, they're expecting the environment that they expect is so interesting. It's so different from the environment that I started working in. And I think we need to actually embrace that. So that flexibility in the way we work and how we work is where we'll bring different diverse people into our business, whether it's women or people from more culturally diverse backgrounds. I think that, and this is a little bit of a practical example, like coming from the culture that I come from, I've got different things that I do throughout the year, right? So there's a month in the year where I fast for Ramadan, for example. And that means I have to work in a different way during that time. And I'm really fortunate because that's really supported in the business that I work in. So I think that to get more diversity of people in leadership roles, you need to have diversity in the way that you work and operate. It needs to be part of everything that you do, because then people will see themselves as, okay, I can work in that business because they do kind of understand me a little bit. And I don't have to explain myself too much around, like, for example, when I'm fasting for Ramadan, I'm not eating during the day. And people are like, oh, you know, you're not having, I can't necessarily go out to lunch and do all of those things. So I think that it's about encouraging the diversity in the way we work, which attracts the right people to your business. The other thing, I guess, and I know this is something we've been doing for a really, really long time, but it's associations like these, and it's certain programs that those associations might run that link different women together, that is still really, really important. So, you know, over the last 2 years, I've really thought about what roles I want to be in and the career steps that I want to take whilst I balance that with what I really want in my personal life. And, you know, every conversation that I've had with a female leader was just so supportive. No one ever said to me, you know, this is, you know, some people would say this is your prime. You need to really go for, you know, the highest levels that you need to. Your personal life could, you know, potentially wait, that type of thing. No one ever said that. People were like, why don't you take some time off? Why don't you try something a bit different? Create the space in your life for what you actually want. So that honesty in the way that women spoke to me was really refreshing. And it also has potentially, you know, helped me to make decisions that I've made in my life, which have worked out really well for me. And I know that it didn't, I always had this thing that it was going to affect my trajectory in my career, but I had to break some of that thinking that I've had for a really long time. And it was through talking to different people and talking to different women and them being really honest and sharing their experiences with me, which is really vulnerable, right? It's really vulnerable to share sort of your personal experiences with people that you haven't known for a really, really long time. The fact that they did that means that everyone genuinely just, you know, wants the best for you and can help you, give you the advice that you need for your career.
So glad to hear that, you know, you've had such supportive conversations, because, you know, I mean, like, if I just reflect, maybe about 5 years ago, a very senior woman, you know, kind of in the private sector world, kind of outside transport, but, you know, someone who's kind of, you know, well known in terms of her career, she said to me that if you haven't cracked your big job by 42, then you kind of won't make it. You know, she's like, the big job doesn't happen at 48 or at 53. And like, hearing that, actually, I was just like, wow, that's like immense pressure. Now I've kind of got to work out, you know, how do I climb this ladder, and, you know, what does that look like? And if I haven't made it, it's all over. And I don't know, my experience now is like, stuff that, you know, we're all on our own journey. You said something earlier where it was like, you know, you can have everything, you can't have it at once. Like, and Quentin Bryce, the former governor of Australia, like, actually came out and said that, you know, she was a really big advocate for women. And she said, women can have it all, but you can't have it all at once, right? So there are different choices that you need to make. And, you know, so I wanted to ask you, right, in the context then of planning your career, you know, how do you plan it? Are you actively planning it? What kind of considerations are you taking when you think about, well, what could be the next role?
It's interesting. Up until now, I wouldn't say that I actively planned my career. I was fortunate to work sort of in a project type world or on a concept that was emerging and had a little bit of ambiguity to it. So I always had something to go to next, because there was always something emerging. There was always a concept that needed to be looked at or worked out or figured out. Now, though, when I look at my career, I do want to start planning a lot more. And part of that is because I need to balance, you know, personal life plus my career objective. So I need to be a lot more discerning and focused on what I want around that career. It kind of does go back to my value set a bit when I do look at planning my career in the future. I'm pretty passionate about improvement and making change and helping people. And I think that the transport and mobility sector is one of the best sectors that you can do that, because you're connecting with people for a multitude of different reasons. And, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, precinct planning happening at the moment. Cities are changing for the better. You know, we're looking at housing, the cost of living, where our health services need to be, just, I guess, the amount of aged care focus that we need to have in our community as our population changes. So I often think about, you know, is transport sort of the best place to be? And I honestly think that it is, only because you are connecting organically with all of these people who have these different needs and different sectors. And I said, you know, I love connecting people and connecting ideas. Transport is all about that middle bit, right? That connection. So when I think about planning my career, it's really thinking about those types of things, you know, the housing and cost of living piece, and the impact that transport can have on that is really great. So I think there could be lots of opportunities in that in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you just mentioned cost of living, and yes, it's literally on the front page of newspapers around the world, right? Affordable housing, cost of living, and prices of petrol have gone up, electricity has gone up. What are your thoughts on, you know, what's being done, or, you know, what the landscape looks like?
So in Queensland, we've got quite a lot happening in terms of looking at spaces that may not have been used for a while and transforming them into affordable housing for people. So whether that be a, you know, a school or like an aged care facility that has the space to be able to house, you know, whether it's families or young people or perhaps, you know, more vulnerable members of our community. So there's a lot of thinking already happening in that space. I guess in Queensland, it's our regional footprint that we really need to consider, as well as our Southeast Queensland footprint. So it's about how we work with industry and our you know, partners in transport to be able to think about how we can affect things like cost of living. So from a public transport perspective, you know, we go back to sort of the age-old things around the cost of our fares. From a registration and licensing perspective, we look at the cost of someone being able to get their driver's license. That, you know, is really important in a regional context where we may not have the strength of public transport that we have in Southeast Queensland, where it is really important for them to have that vehicle to be able to go to work or to, you know, take their family to the hospital or that type of thing. So I think that there's work that could be done from a policy perspective when it comes to cost of living and in transport. There's probably some quite innovative ideas that we can learn from overseas. I think though, Michelle, some of them often won't, you know, may not be as palatable, and there is slightly different environments in Australia that we need to take into consideration. So it's about learning from other jurisdictions what they've done in the cost of living space. There are definitely things that we can do from a transport perspective. So a lot of it, I guess, is about, you know, we want to make public transport a preferred option. And we always go back to, certainly in Queensland, it's the frequency and reliability of our services that will get our customers onto public transport. And we have some really great projects like Cross River Rail, you know, a really big rail program in the future that's going to significantly transform the southeast corner of our state. That's going to give customers so many different options and choices of how they can travel, and really endeavor to increase that frequency of public transport and that reliability of public transport that will help people get out of their cars and onto those forms of transport. The other thing I also did want to mention is, you know, you've got a lot of industry that is willing to work with us in this space. So first and last mile, I've always said, in Queensland is quite big. So it's, you know, not a couple of hundred metres. It can be much more than that. So I think that working with industry to understand the potential space that they can play in first and last mile is really interesting. That not only contributes to our economy, by helping businesses create services for first and last mile, but it also has the opportunity to give customers different choices and potentially more affordable ways to get to a public transport hub. One of the things I know that a lot of people talk about when they talk about Brisbane is micro e-scooters and micro mobility. You know, we see a lot of people in our suburbs using that option to get them to the train station, for example.
Wow. There's so much you just shared that's so important. You know, when you talk about frequency and reliability, actually sometimes I think we forget about it, right? I mean, and I know obviously people who are working on our networks and operating them, you know, that's at the top of their mind. They're the KPIs they're working to. But at its core, the backbone of the public transport network needs to be frequent and reliable, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it is the most sustainable way to move masses of people, right, around our cities and towns. So, I mean, as you've spoken, you know, what I've really heard from you is actually like your passion for the industry and the exciting opportunities there are when you work in transport. What do you think we can do to get that message out and to encourage more women to work in the sector?
I think it's about helping women understand the different types of roles in our sector because they are so wide and varied. You know, we tend to promote a lot of our technical roles, which I think is amazing because you've got women who are, you know, stepping into those technical roles and adding those different perspectives. But I think perhaps people don't know the maybe not other roles that are available in the transport sector. You know, we have a range of different roles just available in Queensland that are across multiple different functions. I think our department has over, you know, 80 or 90 different functional aspects of what we do. And that can go from things like strategic communications right through to customer experience, right through to, you know, data scientists in our data and technology space, right through to human-centered design experts, you know, right through to frontline sort of more customer service experts. So I think that, you know, sometimes people don't know the types of roles that are available in transport because they may only see one facet of it. You know, as much as we have a really large infrastructure side of our sector, which is really important and grows our state, we have a really large services side, and that services side has so many different roles that need to be there to enable a service to actually get to our customer and for our customers to be able to use that service every day.
Yeah, I know. There's just so many possibilities, right? So I'm going to finish on my last question because we're pretty much out of time. It's a question I always ask. What would be your top piece of advice for women and people who are early on in their career in the public transport and mobility sector?
There's actually a couple. So one of them we've already spoken about, and this is something that will always resonate with me, is that you can have everything, not just at the same time. The other piece of advice is it goes back to that authenticity. So it's okay to be yourself. It's okay if you don't see someone like yourself in a role that you want to be in, because, you know, you will be in that role one day and people will look up to you. So I think for me, I often try to sort of fit in a lot and try to maybe not show my differences, but I think that it's your differences that are going to add so much value to the work that you do in transport and mobility, because you're affecting the lives of every single customer, and all of those customers are different, and they will resonate more with you the more authentic that you are.
I love that, Ishra. I really love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So generous, so honest, so open, you know, with sharing your experience, with your amazing advice. Yeah, I just like, I loved doing this episode with you. You're such a superstar. I honestly love seeing, you know, where your career goes. And I just can't wait to kind of see all of the impact you make in the future as well.
Thanks so much, Michelle. It was great talking to you. Thank you.
That was Ishra Baksh, the Executive Director of Strategic Insights and Transformation at the Queensland Department of Transport and Main Roads. I'm Michelle Batsis, your host. Look forward to speaking with you next time.
Thank you for listening to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. We're proud to deliver this episode in partnership with NEC Smart Transport Solutions. To find out more, visit nec.com.au. This series is produced by Jamie Lee Owen and Sophia Dickinson for the Public Transport Association Australia, New Zealand. To find out more, please visit our website, ptaanz.org. Tune in for more soon.